From news across the world to events in your community. Hear about it all on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. It's been a fabulous week for our producer, Rob Center. He's got a lot more to do today, but he's done a great job all week, so we really appreciate that. In the studio with us now, Rick Bressler is here. He happens to be, his occupation now is, what, student at Lock Haven, right?
That's right.
He's a full-time student. He's a U.S. Army veteran. He's a trained nurse. He's studying social work at Lock Haven, and he's also in his past done a work study at one of the VFWs in the region around here, and that's where he found out about a fascinating individual. Maybe start out at the beginning. How did you ever find out about Captain Lawrence Ritter?
To be honest, it sort of starts out like one of those bad jokes where you might hear it in a bar where it kind of goes like this. Two men were taking a hike in the woods, and the one man says to the other, "Did you ever hear about?" But instead of having a punchline, what it has is, "Did you ever hear about the World War II pilot that crashed in the mountains outside of Slate Run?"
All right, super pilot, heroic.
Yes, very true.
In the war, flying after the world in 1946 and crashes.
Yeah, they're April 26th of 1946. He was flying from Selfridge Air Force Base in Michigan to Mitchell Field in New York. And while passing over Pennsylvania, of course, imagine a freak snowstorm in PA during April, not unheard of. And according to the reports that I tracked down during my research, he was flying somewhere around 15,000 feet, I believe, in a P-47. And ice static, as they called it, where his instrumentation froze due to the freezing temperatures so high up. And the plane apparently stalled out. Now, that's where things get a little sketchy. It could either be that he regained control of the plane, but it was too late, or he never got control out of it again. And he just literally started to plunge towards the earth. And he made a straight nosedive right into a ridgetop of a mountain, and it was a very remote location. So the problem there was, instead of tracking in, there was no signs of the debris. The snow put the fires out, and he passed through the trees. He didn't take any trees out during his during the crash. So despite hundreds of dispatched military personnel, civilian volunteers, aerial searches, they could not find him. And the search, I believe it was May 21st, they finally called off the search in 1946. And it wasn't until 7 months later that the crash was actually found by accident by a couple of bear hunters that stumbled upon it.
And it wasn't a survivable crash, really, anyway.
I certainly can't see how that would have been possible. So
okay, so this, where did he grow up? We're talking about Captain Lawrence Ritter. Rick Bressler's with us, but we're talking about a man he became to honor and respect and do research on, Captain Lawrence Ritter. Where was he from?
He was born in Yonkers, New York, and grew up there, went to Roosevelt High School in New York. A very athletically gifted individual. He ran track. He played football. He even set some records back in those days. He was very well known for his 100-yard dash. He won the Penn Relays, actually, in 1940 while he was in college. He did attend Dartmouth, actually. So he was obviously also academically gifted. And it was in 1941 that he ended up getting inducted into the U.S. Army, just shy of beginning his senior year of college. So,
all right. So he joins, Air Force, right?
The U.S. Army. Yeah, he was U.S. Army. And after he was inducted and going through basic training and so forth, he basically requested to transfer into the Aviation Academy. And it wasn't until after Pearl Harbor that he was transferred in. So he was essentially discharged from the Army, and then he was not, I don't want to say reenlisted, but he was placed into the Aviation Academy and eventually getting his pilot wings, and then he was commissioned a second lieutenant. So he went from being an enlisted personnel essentially to becoming an officer.
All right, so he grows up in New York, ends up in U.S. Armed Forces, piloting, and fights in World War II.
Yes, he was deployed to North Africa in January of 1943. He crossed the ocean on the USS Ranger with, of course, several other military personnel. And it turns out he was part of the 325th Fighter Group, which became famously known as the Checkertail Clan. The Checkertail Clan literally was the tail of their planes. They painted it into a checkered pattern so that they were recognizable during combat situations, so that there wasn't any accidental shootings or anything like that.
Right. So he's serving in World War II in Africa, 129 degrees, one of the days that he's talking about. He wrote a letter to his folks. And gets out of the war successfully. Had hoped to fly briefly over our area, but then suddenly we end up with a local tie.
Yeah, so that's where Pennsylvania comes in. He, you know, crashed the plane. As I previously mentioned, it was 7 months until he was found. And this is when it was first brought to my attention. All we really knew was there was a woman from the area where he crashed. It's outside of Slate Run. And she had like an online persona and called herself Mountain Girl. And she did this blog, and she posted a picture of the memorial stone that was eventually placed there. And it wasn't until 2001 that it was put there. And in her blog, she questioned whether anybody knew family, friends, anything like that, to try and get them involved. So all I had to start with was literally a picture of that stone. And on that memorial stone is his name, the year he was born and the day he died. And that's all the information that I had to begin with. And it blew up from there. It took me a couple of months to get some decent information where I finally realized he was an ace pilot. But the true accomplishment out of all of this is the fact that I did find surviving family. I found his niece, who was in Michigan. And last year, April 26th of 2018, was the 72nd anniversary of his death. I invited her to come down after I tracked her down, and she came with her husband. And we had a nice visit with them, and she spoke at the service we held. We had something like 50, 55 people that came up to the site. And
this is at the site.
Yeah, we went to the site. Yeah, I led a whole convoy of people up to the crash site. What is nice about it is the Army did have to basically build a road to get to it. And then from there, after the military was done, loggers used it for a while. So there is a road there, but it is gated. So I had to contact DCNR to unlock the gate. And the reason I wanted to do that was essentially people that weren't really capable of doing the hike, I could literally drive them within 75 feet of the crash site. Otherwise, if you hike from the gate, it's about a mile and a half to 1.5 miles, which I've done, and which a lot of the people did. That was the idea, to hike to it, to have time to reflect on his passing, have time to think about what that man went through.
That's too much for some people,
though. Yeah, and some people, you know, it's not a difficult hike, but it's, you know, for beginners, it's a nice walk.
Okay. So let's begin with the end in mind at this point.
Sure.
You produce a book and then a documentary. How did you go from being fascinated and hoping to really honor Captain Ritter and then saying, well, this is a book. You know, I've got pictures and relatives and interviews and Army documents and so on. It's got to be a book, and then it becomes a documentary.
Well, I never had that plan to start with. It was just a matter of, as I was collecting information and starting to gather actual documents and digital copies that fortunately his niece had. She didn't realize what all she had, but when we got together, she brought stuff with her, and together we opened up this incredible history, a plethora of information about the man, which finally clarified some of the things that I wasn't able to figure out. And that's the crazy part. She didn't realize what all was in that box. And so she came to my house the night before the ceremony. We opened it up, and here's all this incredible. It took me months. I literally had that stuff on my hand in my home for months, going through it, scanning documents, taking them to a place to have digital copies made. But in there, this is kind of where the documentary idea came in. In there was a couple of old 16-millimeter reels. And I'm sitting there with Janice's husband, his niece's husband, and I very carefully, you know, we grab it very delicately and start looking at it through a light, and we realize it's footage of sky, and I was like, sky footage? That's got to be gun camera footage. And sure enough, I took it to Hoyer's Photo in Williamsport, where they had a digital copy produced for me, cleaned it up so I could see it. And there's about 12 minutes worth of gun camera footage that he had of him.
From World War II.
Yes, of him. So it's footage that has never been seen. A lot of it's training footage, which is still fascinating because in there you get to see how they used to take the tow planes and they would have a cable extended out from it, and there's this big, large, massive canvas at the end of the cable. So you have this tow plane pulling this canvas while the guys in the gun, in the planes, the combat pilots are shooting at that canvas. And so you see footage like that. There is one section in there where I can't tell if they're dummy planes or if it's like practice or if it's actual planes parked. It's a little hard to tell. But he's just gunning down a line of parked planes, which is, to me, it's incredible whether it's training or not, because you can see the impact of what he's doing, the skill that it takes to target like that. And then there's also like a small building that he blows up. It's pretty cool. I mean, I was like, this is awesome.
Get out of here.
Yeah, so.
We see some of that in the documentary.
Yes, yeah, I put it in. But that's where the documentary begins. I was like, my Lord, there's, you know, all this incredible footage. And on top of that, there was another reel. And it was actually, what was beautiful about it was vacation footage of him as a child with his family. And so I literally had all this incredible footage of a man that turns out who's an American hero that was forgotten.
You got to get that out there.
So I started putting things together, and I started taking all the documents that I found. So it's not like a photo slideshow, but I do go through various phases of his life with this.
The book's not ready yet, right?
Well, it's in the final phase, but yeah,
it's not going to be for sale tomorrow.
Well, you never know.
Okay, it might be. It's that close. Okay.
Yeah, we're that close.
And then tomorrow, you're showing the documentary at the Campus Theater. It's free to get in, but you're asked to make a contribution or a donation to...
Correct.
Not to offset all your expenses, but to go to more of this kind of work in the future.
Yeah, I'm hoping to... I've already started interviewing, actually, other veterans. As a matter of fact, I've been recently interviewing a World War II veteran who was a tail gunner. And he was part of the Mighty Eighth, so...
Tomorrow, doors open at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Campus Theater, Lewisburg, 1:30 p.m. is the showing. There'll be popcorn there. Rick Bressler's going to be there, maybe with the book, you just never know.
Yeah.
And you're going to be talking about Captain Ritter.
Yep.
Up in the Northern Tier.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I have only 1,000 more questions, so please come back when the book's definitively out.
You got it.
Bring a copy back. I'll buy the first copy if you sign it, and then
you got it.
We'll go from there. Well, thank you so much for this. Thank you, Rick, for bringing this in.
Thank you for having me here today.
Rick Bressler, tomorrow, 1:30, Campus Theater, Lewisburg, the documentary about Captain Lawrence Ritter. His plane crashed in our area while he was serving in the U.S. Army. Rick, thank you for your service as well.
Thank you.